Hello, I'm Anita Gaidra.
And I'm Don McMahon. Welcome to How Did I End Up Here? A soft Irish rain production for Highland Radio about people from all over the world who, like us, have made Donegal their home. Today's guests both met legendary folk singer Pete Seeger. Rick, when he photographed him in a hotel in Newcastle, and Kathleen on the side of a dusty Alabama road on a civil rights march. Rick says this is the difference between them.
My name is Kathleen McCreary. I was born in... You got your name right. Yeah, I did. But...
My name is Rick Walton. I was born in Newcastle-upon-Tyne in the northeast of England.
I was born in Morden, Manitoba, Canada. How did I end up here? The answer has to be in my daughter's fiddle playing that brought us to Glencolumbkill, and I fell in love with Donegal.
I followed Kathleen. We're sitting out looking over a loch, which has a strange name that I can never remember, and used to be a huge loch because it fed the water for the corn mill down the road. So as far as you could see, apparently, at one point, there was loch, and now we have a pocket loch.
And sometimes you look out and there's mist, sometimes there's snow covering the mountains in the distance, but it is just a beautiful location, very peaceful. And I sometimes sit here in my rocking chair by the window and in the early morning when no one's about, and just gaze at this delicious view, and I feel very fortunate.
Rick had taken early retirement from his teaching job. They toyed with the idea of moving to Canada, but decided it would be too far away from their children in England. Instead, they chose to relocate to County Donegal. But it took them a while to get to their current house in Milford.
We've moved, is it five times since
something
we left
like
the UK?
I don't know.
Yeah, five times in 5 years. So this is where we're going to stay, I think.
For a while.
For a good while.
Rick had lived in the same part of the world all his life. So moving to Ireland for him was a big decision, and I think quite a, in some ways a wrench, but in other ways, well, you can talk, you can...
Blessed relief would be the way to describe it, quite honestly. I mean,
yes.
I had, in all my years, I had never been away from Newcastle for more than 6 weeks at any one time. And that was working in Butlins, which really isn't anywhere at all. So I don't have Kath's experience of travelling and living in different places. I'd lived in Newcastle all my life.
Yeah.
So I was looking for a change and a complete change. Why the hell not, I think I thought.
Mm.
And because we both had and still have these feelings for this country that we're in now, moving here was not such a wrench as I thought it would be, partly because when we arrived here, I just felt, oh, this is where I am. This feels like home.
We began in Glencolumbkill. Then we put roots down and we got to know people in the local community and enjoyed our time there very much.
I know we're blow-ins, but I feel that we actually became part of that community.
I'd like to think we did. We tried to contribute. We don't.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
But for us, it's very important that we don't just take, but that we give. And so, but it was a bit remote. We began to feel...
Everybody who I've said that we lived in Glencolumbkill, they always say, oh, it's beautiful. And then there's a pause and they go, but it's very remote, isn't it?
Kathleen first visited Glencolumbkill years earlier when her teenage daughter Rosa was learning the fiddle. A family friend had recommended that she take her to Glen Fiddle Week.
And Glencolumbkill was just stunningly beautiful, and we had a very, very good time there. We were so impressed with the way all these experienced and talented fiddle players took the young ones under their wings and mentored them and encouraged them and inspired them and helped them to develop their potential. You know, it was fantastic. When I returned with Rosa when she was a teenager and we were in the pubs in Glencolumbkill, and you'd be standing next to somebody at the bar and there was no question that there wouldn't be a conversation. Of course they would start a conversation with you. And the conversations were flying from subject to subject, and people would have opinions about everything and were not loath to express them. But they were funny, and they were curious, and they were poetic in the way that they expressed themselves. And I came away thinking conversation is an art form in Ireland. It's not just a means of passing the time or of passing information back and forth. It's an actual art form. People they really are quite proud in a way of the way that they can entertain each other with this means of speaking.
On that trip, she reconnected with her Irish roots. Her grandfather was 18 when he went to Canada from Ballybay, County Monaghan, in 1875. At a famine commemoration on Cape Clear Island, prayers were said not just for those who had died, but for those who were forced to leave. And Kathleen says she found herself feeling included. And it hit her that the reasons her grandfather had immigrated were similar. Economic conditions drove him to leave Ballybay to make a new life in Canada.
And that's what he did, and was a pioneer out in the prairies in Manitoba, and carved himself a farm out of the, chopped down the trees and built the sod house and whatever he had to do. And I thought, well, that's why I'm there and not here, And so I felt included, and I must say, when I came to Ireland, I felt at home. The storytelling was very familiar to me. I can remember my dad and his brother and sister and their friends from the farm in Manitoba sitting up late at night with a bottle of whiskey and talking and laughing. And they didn't call it crack, but it was crack. It was good crack, And they thrived on that. And that was when my dad was happiest. I can remember looking back and seeing him in his element. I have this connection with Ireland, and I'm loath to go on about it because I know that it must be trying for Irish people to have all these North Americans and Australians who come over here to reclaim their ancestry and their roots and so on. That was not my motivation for moving here at all, but there was certainly a sense that I felt comfortable here. I felt at home here. I felt as though I understood people here. I had a connected sense.
And I said, "Who's Martin Hayes?" Because I've never heard of him. And they went, looked at me pityingly and moved on. My host said, played me live in Seattle after that. They went, "Oh, I think I get the picture now. I think I get the picture." And then years later, when Kath and I first came over to Glen Cullen...
Rick held an exhibition of his photographs some months ago in the Playhouse in Derry. Throughout the 70s and 80s, he photographed all of the famous musicians that performed as part of Newcastle's lively music scene. Among them, the Rolling Stones, Neil Young, the Grateful Dead, and Roy Gallagher.
Well, without further ado, I'd like to introduce you to Rick Walton, who's responsible for these fantastic works that we see along the wall. So please congratulate him along with me. That's a very good award.
Flash mob looks like, isn't that what the camera? My mother told me never to be worried about a large group of people unless they're walking towards you. So please don't just stay there. I really don't do talking because I'm a photographer. But I taught
photography, and I taught IT as well, which I had done for a number of years. Before that, I was a photographic technician in the Polytechnic in Newcastle, and during that time, whilst holding a full-time job, I was working as a theatre photographer for about 15 or 16 years and photographing, as you said, musicians.
Oh, he's off. For God's sake, come back. So I spent the next hour and a half in the dressing room with Paul and Linda McCartney. Like a young boy's dream come true. I used all my film up in the dressing room I only had about 4 shots left to take it on the stage.
I've spent most of my so-called career indoors photographing under poor lighting conditions. So to be suddenly find myself, I mean, obviously I took photographs when I was on holiday, you know, because we were outdoors then, and I enjoyed taking photographs. I enjoy the whole part of it. But when we arrived in Donegal, I suddenly realized, well, this is what there is. There is landscape here. And I sort of started doing it, and I am beginning to see the bigger picture a bit more, but I wouldn't describe myself as a landscape photographer at all. I'm a photographer who happens to be in the middle of some of the most beautiful landscape I've ever been in, and if I can't respond by taking photographs, then I shouldn't be here.
What I do like, though, is when a photograph begins to unravel in front of me, as this one absolutely did. I must have been driving to a draw, I think, and coming along the road towards me were a dozen sheep and a tractor right in the middle of the road. And I took this photograph through the windscreen of the car, you know, facetiously posted saying, "Gay traffic jam in Donegal," and thought no more of it. I put this in an exhibition in Glencolumb Hill, and somebody came to me and said, "Do you know who that is in the tractor?" And I said, "No, it was a local man who had a problem with facial cancer. He was very, very badly disfigured, so he kept himself to himself quite a lot of the time." And I knew something more about this photograph. And then the same person said, "Oh, you see those sheep? He was quite well known for overfeeding his sheep." So now I have a lot of fat sheep and a guy in a tractor. And I'm going, okay. And then another person looked at the photograph and said, "You see that house in the background? Well, that's where he used to live, where he lives. And behind that is a quarry. And when they started digging the quarry, they offered him a house somewhere else, a nice house where he could live. And he decided to turn that down and lived in that house next to the quarry." You know, I can look into that photograph now rather than kind of looking at it. Some years later, the cancer came back, and I visited him and gave him a copy of this photograph, because by that time I knew who he was. And he was very ill, but he seemed to appreciate it. And then I learned later that they put this photograph on his coffin, which meant an enormous amount to me, I have to say, because you take photographs and they're used and people say they're nice and everything, but sometimes you have the opportunity to actually do something with a photograph other than just for it to be looked at. And I was very proud about that.
Back up to 1965, Kathleen, then a 21-year-old radio journalist, boards a bus in Minneapolis. She's on her way to Alabama to take part in the now historic Civil Rights March, led by Dr. Martin Luther King from Selma to Montgomery. She had been teaching drama to black teens in inner-city St. Paul, but it didn't prepare her for the level of segregation and racial tension that she found in the Deep South. When she reached Selma, it was a town divided. The windows of the bus were rolled up and the doors locked as they drove through white areas.
And I mean, this was something I should say that was remarkable about Selma, was that after a while, when I saw a black face, it felt like family. And it felt, I knew that I was looking at a friend. I knew that I was looking at somebody I could trust, where I would feel safe. And when I saw a white person in Selma, I did not feel safe. I felt threatened, and I actually feared for my safety. And it was extraordinary how that changed over the course of a very few days.
One time she was traveling in a car with a black minister. They became aware that they were being followed. He opened the glove compartment to reveal a gun. "I'm a man of God," he said, "a man of peace, but I will defend myself." Kathleen joined the 25,000 others to march to Montgomery.
Along the way, on one of those stops, I remember hearing the sound of a tin whistle. And I looked round, and there was a man squatting in the dust with a circle of people around him. And it was Pete Seeger. And that was a wonderful experience, because I realized that he had walked all the way with us. Most of the other celebrities, give them full credit for their involvement in the movement, but they flew in. They didn't walk in the dust and the dirt and the heat.
When they finally reached their destination, crowds lined the streets to welcome them.
And I can remember an elderly woman, a black woman, standing by the side of the road, weeping. Tears were rolling down her cheeks, and she was lifting her hands up into the air, and she was praying, and she was singing, and she was sobbing. And she was saying, "I thought I'd never live to see it. Lord, I thought I'd never live to see it."
Her desire to make the world a better place was crystallized by the Selma experience.
You can do something. The world does not have to stay the way it is. If enough people stand up and say, this is wrong, if enough people use their initiative and their energy and their intelligence and their talents and band together, then we can make a difference. When I worked in theatre, I did not want to just perform in plays which were going to be entertainment only. I also wanted the audiences to be encouraged to think and to challenge, and that was the kind of theatre I then sought. I looked for it in others, and I then went on to try to make it. When I couldn't find plays that would do this, then we wrote our own.
Her theater work took her to London, and then to Berlin and Vienna, back to London, and finally to the north of England. In Newcastle, she and Rick met briefly when their daughters were doing Sunday morning gymnastics. They struck up a conversation and got on well. Some years later, after they had both split from their previous partners, Kathleen was preparing to go to Zimbabwe after receiving a bursary for a writer's exchange program. Rick was just back from a photographic assignment to Zimbabwe.
I needed some information and I needed to buy a camera, and there were various things. And so someone said to me, "Oh, well, you know, Rick Walton's just been. Do you know him?" And I said, "Oh, yeah, he was the guy that I met at the gymnastics club in Eldon Square, you know." And I kind of knew him to speak to him, and I'd seen him a few times. So they said, "Oh, you must get together with Rick, and he'll show you his photo." And so
I came around and showed you my etchings.
Yes, you showed me. Yes.
And I went around to Kath's house and showed her the trannies and advised her on what camera to buy and stuff like that.
And my mum was there, and I had separated some months before, and after Rick left, my mum said, "Oh, what a nice man." She said, "If only you could find a man like that." We then had quite a lot in common. We had Africa in common and a number of other things in common, and that it did lead to a relationship, which has lasted.
It has, yes. Many years now.
Oh, that's brilliant. Yes, look at the blood. That's fantastic. Yeah, that's very nice. Okay, we need to start, everybody, so let's go. So it's chicken and sugar. Alan Bennett, Mark McCall.
I'd retired at 65, and I'd been counselling. I'd become a counsellor later in life, and I had been working as a counsellor for a few years, but I was itching to get back to some arts practice, and I had been casting around for something to do, but again, wanting to do something meaningful. And Brecht was a big influence on my life and on my work. And throughout the autumn, I ran 10 weeks of Brecht workshops where we invited actors and others to come and take part in workshops where we could apply Brecht's methods to a role in a play. And the workshops, I'm pleased to say, went extremely well.
Because that needs a pause there. That needs that moment where you freeze and you wait. The knocking over of the chair was amazing. I mean, it was so strong. Really, I mean, I actually teared up.
And it's interesting, you know, because we've talked about emotion and Brecht and the fact is...
We had a sharing at the end of the workshops in the Remelton Town Hall. And before we knew it, we had about 70 or 80 people come to this event.
Up here, we just seem to have fallen into a great crowd of people, and where you can't throw a stick down the road without hitting some artistic person in this place, which means that there is a good supportive network. The Art of Resistance Collective is a group of six artists. It was started by Bernadette Hopkins, and she's brought together six of us from different disciplines. And basically, we are trying to raise public consciousness about struggle throughout the world. Our thrust, mainly, I think, is the Palestinian struggle, because that's dear to all, I know, to all our hearts.
I think a lot of people are attracted to Donegal, partly because of its beauty.
It's lovely, isn't it?
It is.
Yes.
Partly because there's a healthy rebellious streak in Donegal. People are not necessarily going to behave as they're supposed to or the way they're expected to. Artists have come here from all over the world for those reasons. And then, of course, the more people come, the more you realize that this is a very sympathetic and convivial place to be, that you do find kindred spirits.
The first time I came to Ireland was in 1988, I think. And I can remember, I'd been there a few days, so I kind of knew the balance of things. But I was walking, I can remember walking down this very large crescent-shaped beach. And at the other end of the crescent-shaped beach was a guy walking towards me. And I knew, obviously, that we would meet somewhere in the middle of this beautiful crescent-shaped beach. I also knew that if I was back in the UK, we would get about 10 feet apart and both of us would find something fascinating in the opposite direction and walk past each other and not say a word. But I knew this was Ireland. I knew I was going to be talking. So that was great. So I was there for about an hour and a half, I think, with this guy. And yeah, I thought at the end of that, I can remember actually thinking I could live here. I could be somewhere where you can engage with strangers in that way. And it just seemed absolutely natural. So that was my first impression of the place. And it was a really good one. It was nothing to do with anything else other than people, which is why you are in places, I guess.
How Did I End Up Here is a Soft Irish Rain production for Highland Radio. It was funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with the television licence fee.